Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 18th, 2016. A new UN report on South Sudan is released confirming mass atrocities committed in July.
Let us stop acting as if the principle of sovereignty, as critical as it is to the functioning of the international order, as if that principle gives the South Sudanese government or any government license to commit mass atrocities against its own people or to fuel a humanitarian crisis that has left millions of lives hanging in the balance.
And the U.S. introduces a U.N. resolution for an arms embargo and targeted sanctions on South Sudan.
The arms embargo will not have a tangible result. It will only be disadvantaging government and will even lead to the failure of the country. And if the country failed, then the United Nations has not achieved what it wants to achieve.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A United Nations panel of experts report was released to the public yesterday saying the 2015 peace deal has been, quote, de facto collapse. And the U.S. announced yesterday at the U.N. Security Council meeting that it plans to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan as well as targeted sanctions against individuals. Ayan Bior has more from Washington.
A top United Nations official reiterated at yesterday's U.N. Security Council meeting that South Sudan could slide into genocide. Samantha Power, the U.S. representative to the U.N., says an arms embargo and sanctions will send a clear message to perpetrators of the nearly three-year conflict that the UN will work to stop the flow of new weapons to the country that could be used against civilians.
As we sit here, more arms are flowing into that country. The acquisition of heavy weapons, aircraft, and military vehicles, which have been used to inflict such devastating violence in this conflict. As we've learned elsewhere, an arms embargo is effective if there's a broad and robust commitment to its enforcement. Imposing new targeted sanctions designations will isolate the individuals who have consistently been responsible for the acts that have brought South Sudan to this moment and which have caused so much suffering.
Power's announcement comes just 1 week after Adama Dieng, the UN Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, warned that the signs of ethnic hatred and the targeting of civilians could culminate into genocide if nothing is done to stop it. There are six individuals on the UN sanctions list for travel ban and asset freezes. The panel found that one of those individuals, Peter Gadet, a major general in the SPLM in opposition, traveled from Khartoum to Nairobi despite an active UN travel ban against him. Brian Adeba, associate policy director at the Washington-based Enough Project, says the loopholes that have allowed Gadet to move freely should be closed.
The fact that Peter Gadet himself has been able to travel from Khartoum to Nairobi, as stated in the panel of experts report, is an illustration of the loopholes that exist and that need to be plugged. He's not the only one. There is a sanctioned general in the South Sudanese army who has previously also traveled to Addis Ababa. So this is the conundrum that the Security Council may have to address for these measures to be effective. But by putting the law on the letter, by enacting the law, that is itself commendable.
Joseph Moamaluk, the South Sudanese representative to the United Nations, told council members he recognizes that it is the responsibility of his government to provide humanitarian needs to its people and that it agrees to the inclusivity of all ethnic groups and political factions, so long as those groups respect the country's democratic principles and the rule of law. But Moam says the government is trying to stop an armed rebellion.
Reading this document, there are allegations in the report whose accuracy can be debated. But our intention is not to contest this allegation, but simply want the Council and all concerned parties to get a better understanding of the root causes of the problem in order to develop appropriate remedies.
The report points to what it describes as the provocative policy of President Salva Kiir by creating 28 new states, which the report states only exacerbated divisions. The panel's report says Ye has particularly been affected by recent violence. The panel has received reports of indiscriminate targeting of civilians by armed forces affiliated with the SPLM and government. Ambassador Power says it's clear that what is happening in South Sudan is more than a political struggle.
Let us stop acting as if the principle of sovereignty, as critical as it is to the functioning of the international order, as if that principle gives the South Sudanese government or any government license to commit mass atrocities against its own people or to fuel a humanitarian crisis that has left millions of lives hanging in the balance.
The report confirms that government soldiers carried out extrajudicial killings, rapes, abductions, arbitrary arrests, and detentions, along with other crimes. Opposition forces were also accused of committing crimes. Power says it is unacceptable that crimes against civilians go unpunished in South Sudan.
And yet, those who perpetrate these attacks, who hack innocent civilians to death, who burn down their homes, who rape women, who conscript men and young boys to fight, threaten journalists and human rights defenders, enjoy near total impunity. The same goes for those who incite others to carry out such hateful acts. The message that the government sends by not holding them accountable is crystal clear. Keep at it. Keep doing what you're doing. These ingredients that I've described and others have described in more powerful and greater detail, these are ingredients that create a climate conducive to mass atrocities.
The call for an arms embargo has been supported by rights groups, including the Human Rights Watch and the Enough Project. Adeba says if the council introduced these measures months ago, the country could have avoided the risk of genocide. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
President Kiir's spokesman says imposing an arms embargo and sanctioning individuals in South Sudan will only weaken the government and put the country at risk of attack. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
President Sol's spokesperson Aten Wekaten says imposing sanctions on government officials as recommended by the UN panel is the wrong approach because those individuals are fighting to protect South Sudan's sovereignty.
The arms embargo will not have an intangible result. It will only be disadvantaging government and will even lead to the failure of the country. And if the country failed, then UN the United Nations has not achieved what it wants to achieve.
Ateni says the United Nations should instead focus on helping to make sure the transitional government of national unity implements the peace agreement.
It is they themselves who have actually nursed it. They have nursed the agreement on resolution or conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, and by evaluating whether the peace agreement is intact or not, they will acquaint themselves with the realities in the ground in a state of assumption. And that will be the best way.
The report accuses pro-government elements of consistently using social media to agitate against the international presence in South Sudan, in particular the United Nations. Government supporter and activist Madingo Rakech is cited in the report as being among those caught consistently using their social media accounts to propagate inflammatory statements against the United Nations presence and quote. The report includes a ignored Facebook post that says, quote, UN evacuated rebel Riek Machar, adding that we are against the UN in South Sudan because they are a party to the conflict, they support rebellion killings, unquote. Ngor says he does not oppose the United Nations presence in South Sudan, but does oppose the mission's Chapter 7 mandate, which allows it to take necessary actions with respect to threats to the peace, breaches of the peace, and acts of aggression.
We know how the UN mission came on the eve of our independence. This mission mandate was imposed on us, upon us. And because of the challenges of nationhood, which are normal to any nation, they now got emboldened to be able to renew the mandate unilaterally without the approval of our government and the people. So the solution for South Sudan is for UNMISS to be geared towards development rather than confrontation.
Ngor argues that if the UN deploys additional troops in South Sudan, violence in the country will continue.
It is a sure thing that if those 4,000 troops come in to South Sudan, say in a month's time, the likelihood of conflict persisting is enormous.
Ngor says UNMISS should concentrate on empowering youths in the country and encourage them to avoid using hate speech.
My message to UNMISS is to engage critical voices like myself instead of denouncing citizens who have a point to make, because that's what democracy is. Instead of denouncing them as people who are propagating against UNMISS, which is not the case.
Ngor heads the Rally for South Sudan group, a civil society youth organization that advocates for unity among South Sudanese. Its Facebook cover says, UNMISS must go. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
While in Washington here, a diplomat at the South Sudan Embassy has been named in the UN Panel of Expert report as one of those agitating against the presence of the United Nations in South Sudan. The report cites Ambassador Gordon Boy as consistently using social media to provoke animosity towards United Nations in his country. The ambassador is dismissing the report, calling it biased towards the interests of the UN in South Sudan.
I was even surprised why they included my writing in Facebook, because what I wrote, I was only condemning Dr. Luka Byong and Pagana Mum not to call for South Sudan to be ruled by UN for 10 to 15 years. So I never wrote anything against the UN protection forces or that the UN should not be in South Sudan. I didn't write that, because we, as a guy, I'm a representative of the government, and then whatever position the government is taking is what that I defend.
I remember interviewing you, and you told me that you were going to revoke passports of all the people who are calling for UN to take over the country, and you said no UN will step in South Sudan.
No,
this,
I said...
This is on record.
There is a difference between UN protection force and UN taking over the South for 10 to 15 years. So if I am against, and I believe everybody in South Sudan is against UN colonizing the South, taking over the executive function, the legislative, disarming the SPLA for 10 to 15 years. So this is the difference. I'm not against the UN going to South Sudan like what the mandate or what the agreement we signed in 2011 or the UN Protection Force.
Ambassador Boy, your work is as a civil servant, and being a diplomat, you are a civil servant. And I know that your job entitles you to protect the image of your country, to support the policies of your government. But at the same time, your code of conduct, according to the South Sudan Diplomatic Act, it does not allow you to take a partisan position during issues of the country. And your postings have been sounding like you're taking a partisan position. How do you react to that?
It is not a partisan position. If somebody is calling for the colonization of my country, are you saying that I should keep quiet? I cannot keep quiet. I will tell them no. We are a sovereign country. We are an independent country. We are a member of the UN, and we cannot be colonized.
What is your definition of a sovereign country?
A sovereign country is a country that has a leadership. And then it is a country that is ruling its people through democratic process, as we have been doing, and it is not a country that can be taken over by the UN. That is my definition.
And how would you react to the report of the panel of experts where they are saying that specifically in Yei, civilians have been executed by the South Sudan army?
That is
now,
not
if,
true.
If you are saying that a sovereign country is a country that takes care of its citizens, why are people being executed in Yei?
We did not, our forces did not execute any civilian. Our forces are fighting bandits. The government is fighting bandits in Yei. So these bandits, they do not have uniforms. They look like civilians, but they are armed. And when our forces fought them and they got killed, people would claim, oh, the civilians are killed. No, they are not civilians. These are bandits.
Ambassador Boy, I have also been talking to people in Yei town. I spoke to a very respectable man of God, a bishop of Episcopal Church of South Sudan, and he said residents around Yei town have been forced from their homes, take refuge in the church by people in uniform who are believed to be South Sudan Army. Now, the bishop cannot lie here, Ambassador Boy.
No, okay. John Tanza, the bishop was telling you that there were civilians who ran to his church. That is true, but they were not forced. When there is a fighting, the civilian must find a place where they should be hiding for their own safety. This is what is happening. We are in war. It's a war zone.
Ambassador Boy, I still want to bring you back to the report of the experts. These are people who are not South Sudanese. And they have no interest in your politics.
They do.
They are just doing their work. What
no,
do you
they
mean
do. They have interest. Peyton Nof, his wife, Kate, was the one of the people who wrote an article with Prince Alayman that South Sudan should be taken over by the UN for 10 years. So these people, they already have, we know them, they have political interests. They are very biased.
Do you believe in what the experts said about the situation in South Sudan?
The experts, what they wrote is just a tabloid, rumors, hearsays. They're not true. The government is in control, but we are fighting bandits.
What about the economic situation that they talk about it being there? I understand you have not received your salaries for many, many months. It's as a result of the economic crisis.
It's not a problem with the economic crisis because of global price of oil and also because the United States oil was shut down by the rebels. Now we are working. In 2 to 3 months, everything will change.
But that is a fact in the report that there is a dire economic situation
it's
in the country.
It's not dire. Yes, we have economic issues, but it's not that the way they mentioned in the report.
That's Ambassador Gordon Bwai, who is in charge of diaspora affairs at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington. He was speaking to me earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese girls receive grant for staying in school. Find out where and when.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How would your friends describe you?
As someone who is jovial, I'm easygoing, but I'm strict when the need arises.
My friends describe me about that. I am a very clever girl and I am kind to them. If the exercise have come and they don't know thing, they do not understand from the teacher, I will explain to them.
Very warm, caring. I'm not praising myself though, but someone who goes an extra mile in helping people.
Oh, a good listener and a great friend.
My friends are describing me as somebody who is polite, approachable, helpful to them in their time of need, and advisable because I do a lot in advising students or friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Joint Monitoring Ceasefire Commission, or JMCC, the body overseeing the implementation of the security arrangement in the 2015 peace agreement, says it has finally put in place guidelines for cantoning forces of the SPLA-IO. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
A breakthrough in forming the guidelines for the process of cantoning opposition forces as required by the peace agreement was reached today after a two-day workshop. Lieutenant General James Ajongo, chair of JMCC, highlights some of the guidelines.
What is the location that you needed for you to put to establish as a cantonment? What are those who are supposed to come to the cantonment? Who are them? Who are they? Those who are eligible to come to the cantonments. Are they soldiers with arms? Are they soldiers who are just trained and they are not armed? Are they medical personnel? Are they wounded heroes? Are they other support personnel, like the drivers, like the mechanics, like cooks? These are some of the things that we need actually to clearly put online so that when you put up the cantonment, then you know now who is coming to the cantonment.
Ajongo says the lack of guidelines on how to canton the forces has been a challenge since the establishment of the JMCC. So far, there are still no forces that have been cantoned. But he warns that lack of resources is likely to remain a challenge unless the international community helps pay for it.
If you look at the amount that is required by this cantonment issue, for us to manage one cantonment area in 1 month, it requires us as government to avail more than $100,000 for 750 men in one cantonment in 1 month. So this is one thing that we need actually the regional partners, the international community, to think about it. If they want us to really go in and implement the agreement, then there's need for the support of the process.
Ajongo says so far there are 6 cantonment areas required for the forces that need to be cantoned, 4 in Equatorial Region and 2 in Bahr El Ghazal. He says 4 of the cantonment areas in Equatoria have been identified. The 2 days meeting brought together partners of the security arrangements in the peace agreement, including UNMISS and JEMEC. Chapter 2 of the peace agreement calls for cantoning the SPLA-IO forces as part of security arrangements that will later integrate them into the SPLA in government. Although it is 8 months since the formation of the transitional government of national unity, Ajongo says no cantonment sites have been successfully created. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The International Criminal Court in The Hague has been rocked by a series of withdrawals by African countries that were originally signatories to the Rome Statute that established the court. This week, Russia also pulled its signature from the ICC treaty, and the Philippines could be the next. Henry Ridgewell reports that the court could be facing domino effect of countries quitting its jurisdictions.
Three African states, Burundi, South Africa and Gambia, signal their intention to quit the International Criminal Court this year, claiming the court disproportionately targets African leaders. Phil Clark is from the London University School of Oriental and African Studies.
There's a real concern right across Africa about the meddling of international actors in African affairs.
Russian President Vladimir Putin removed his country's signature from the founding treaty this week, though it had never ratified its membership. His Philippine counterpart said Thursday he might follow Moscow's lead, claiming that, in his words, only the small ones like us are battered. ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda this week defended the court's actions.
As an international community, we should be more concerned about ensuring accountability and justice for these very serious atrocity crimes.
While some African countries plan to quit, others have engaged more directly with the ICC, says analyst Phil Clark.
Countries like Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo have in fact seen the ICC as a tool that they can use against their military and political opponents. Nigeria is also engaging in discussions with the ICC prosecutor at the moment about potentially opening investigations into crimes committed by Boko Haram.
The ICC is opening its first major investigations outside Africa, looking into potential war crimes in the 2008 Russia-Georgia conflict. It has also begun looking into torture allegations against US and British forces in Afghanistan.
Those, I think, are very important cases because it would enable the court to say, look, we're not just picking on African states, we're also willing to tackle the biggest powers in the world.
But as the United States is not a signatory to the court, any successful prosecution appears unlikely. And analysts say the series of member state withdrawals raises the prospect the ICC will no longer be seen as an institution of global justice. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Hundreds of schoolgirls in Imatong State are receiving a cash grant to help them stay in school. State officials say thousands of other girls in remote parts of the state will not benefit from the grant due to insecurity on the roads. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
School girls at Dr. John Garang Memorial Secondary School were all smiles this week as they each received 2,200 South Sudanese pounds, or about $26, to help students buy essential commodities, including sanitary pads, textbooks, and other school necessities. The grants are part of a project known as Girls Education South Sudan, or GEST, a program that is funded by the British government. GEST officials say they have increased the amount of the grants to match South Sudan's rate of inflation. Emmanuel Kenyi heads the GEST project at Caritas Switzerland. He says less than 4,000 out of more than 9,000 school girls in Imotong State will receive the grants this week. He says more than half of all school girls in the state will miss out because officials cannot reach rural schools in insecure areas.
If the situation allows, we will go to the other counties like Equator, like Lopalafon, like Magui. But if the situation does not allow, then we will go next year, because all of us know that our roads are not good. So we will start paying here, and then we will see how to proceed. And then thereafter, we will also go to the other new state, which is called Namurinyang. We will also go and pay girls there.
Some girls at Dr. John Garang Memorial Secondary School say they will use the money to buy school uniforms so they look smart and continue going to school.
So I'm very happy because I received this money. It will help me to pay my school. For instance, like for us as girls, some girls have no parents, they are poor, and this money will help them to pay their school and for buying sanitary pads and other things. The school is scholarship and other materials.
Actually, I'm happy because last time we were chased for our school fees. Now we are approaching the examination time. Now we use that money to pay the school fees and I be comfortable in the classes.
This money is going to help me to buy some scholastic materials like books, school bag. Then this money is helping me also to buy sanitary pads. I'm happy that the money is increased.
Kenyi advises girls to use the money to buy items they need to stay in school.
Cash transfer is one of the components of Girls Education South Sudan that aims to help the girls to have some money in order to enable them buy some of the items that are very important for their school. So the money that we are giving you is to enable you buy those items, like sanitary towels, okay? Like pants, like books, like pens, okay? Sometimes uniforms.
Jacob Atari is the Motong State Education Minister. He told school girls the money being provided should not only help them attend school, but also perform better in school.
I want all of you, when you go from here, talk to those girls who are still in the town, who are loitering, wasting their time. Talk to them that come to school so that next year they will also benefit from this.
Guest officials say more than 3,000 girls in Magui, Ikwoto and Lafon counties who were enrolled in the program will not be reached. The GUEST project began in 2013 with church and government-sponsored schools. The project also allocates money to improve the learning environment in schools by building toilets, providing water and other basic services that improve sanitation in schools. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Victoria Ole singing in her native Kakwa language. We have been listening to Victoria Ole singing in her native Kakwa language. I am John Tanza in Washington. Have a good weekend, and we invite you to tune again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kwisa kanitano.